Well, a good Wednesday afternoon, Jamie and Locker on the Green Zone. As I'm just thrilled for another night of sports because the NBA final, the NHL playoff, Stanley Cup final, they're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Then the World Cup starts tomorrow. The Riders start on Saturday.
Usually when you have like one good series, like if you have like hockey is off the hook, then the basketball's a dud.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you have where both are firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, here we go. It's been a blast, and tonight it's over to the NBA final after the Carolina Hurricanes evened up the series last night. And, of course, Drew Romanda's coming up. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup final and the latest on the Mike Babcock saga. The story dropped on Monday, that the Oilers were kicking the tires. And then on Tuesday, it was more than kicking the tires. The players have signed off on it. Mike Babcock's about to be the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. And then last night, it picked up again on another story. So we'll bring you up to date on Babcock, the investigation now, and all that other stuff. What a wild 48 hours for the Oilers. And we begin the Green Zone with the starting lineup, the top sports headlines. And yes, Carolina evens the Stanley Cup final at two games apiece.
Lucian Fraud, backhand, score. Oh, it's in. And Jordan Stahl's got another. Fans wanted a call. That will ricochet toward the net and in. A big shot by Nikolai Ehlers. And it's 5-3, Carolina.
And that was the final score. Series 2-2 is the tie. And it's another game that saw a two-goal lead evaporate. It's the first time in Cup Final history that it has happened in the first four games of the series where two-goal leads have gone poof for a team.
Yeah.
And another team's come back and tied it. Brandon Bussey, part of the story, made 18 saves on 21 shots, but he came up big. He stopped all nine in the third period to shut out the Golden Knights and help the Carolina Hurricanes win. Frederik Andersen didn't even dress. A speculation there might have been some sort of injury from Game 3, although the team says he's fully healthy. Logan Stankoven opened the scoring for the Hurricanes, and the Hurricanes are now 10-0 when Stankoven scores a goal in the playoffs. He has 11 goals in these playoffs. And Brett Howden set a new Vegas franchise playoff record with his 14th playoff goal, surpassing Jonathan Marchessault. And tomorrow it is game five back in Carolina.
Can't predict this series at all.
No.
Right? If anybody has, they're saying that they have a bead on this series, no, they're lying to you. And we mentioned it already off the top, Mike Babcock hiring for the Oilers, getting even more complicated.
If we're talking about the star players like Connor McDavid and Zach Hyman, they very much want Mike Babcock on their bench as the next head coach. They see him as a winning coach, somebody who clearly can push buttons, but can push them all in the right direction. And it's the influence, the input from those star players that motivated Stan Bowman and management, not to mention ownership, Daryl Cates.
So the NHLPA, I don't begrudge them for doing what they're doing. I think they have to, right?
Yeah.
And I think the NHL is probably engaged on this as well. They have to do their due diligence for the people that they represent. So I don't have an issue with that. What I do have an issue with is if he did something so egregious in Columbus that we have to bring this back to the surface, then you should not have let it go. His resignation shouldn't have been just the end of it. Right? Like, if it was a problem back then, and it's potentially still a problem now, why was it just dropped?
Because he left.
But that you can still invest. If it was such an issue, you still investigate it. Just the fact that he left shouldn't have ended the conversation, because now you're dealing with, okay, now we got to go back and we got to
3 years
this
later.
This whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Oilers and Babcock have decided it is worth the trouble, so they're going through the process. Babcock and the Blue Jackets settled on an exit deal before an official league investigation took place in 2023. I don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And again, maybe he did something awful and so egregious that he should never work again, and I'm wrong, but just it just seems so bizarre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 3 years later, I was like, wait. The NHLPA did an investigation. That's what led to kind of him resigning in the first place, but the NHL
didn't get involved
or didn't discipline him or anything like that. So now that's the snag in the latest in Mike Babcock becoming the next head coach of the Edmonton Oilers.
Weird.
Let's want to run through the list of all the people who have been back in the National, including the guy who's hiring Mike Babcock. Okay, just checking, but sure. Let's run this because he was mean. Okay. Now let's get to the NBA finals.
And maybe he did something awful, and we don't know about it.
If he did, that would have been out already with the NHLPA.
I think you're right. I think.
I get that. That's my hang up. Like what? What?
Yeah. Like that.
Quenville's coaching. Stan Bowman's back in the league. Carter Hart. He's tending net for the Vegas Golden Knights. You could go on the history of the National Hockey League. Craig McTavish is playing. Danny Heatley came back after the car crash that killed Dan Snyder. Like, all these things have happened in the National Hockey League's history. Spousal abuse, all this other stuff. And Mike Babcock, because he wanted to see pictures on a guy's phone, can't coach the Edmonton Oilers. It makes no sense to me.
By the way, it's still weird. It's
sure, it's but still out of weird. The scale of things you should be.
And if he doesn't get a job because of that, then the world. We live in weird times.
Okay, anyway. Let's get to the NBA final for real this time. In New York tonight for game number 4.
A lot of bumping. Brunson spinning. Leans in. Falling away. Shot. Banks at home. High off the glass. Alley-oop to Wembanyama. Perfect pass from Castle. And a lead is up to 3.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson, Victor Wembanyama. They're going back and forth in this series. By the way, President Trump does not need a nap tonight, so he's avoiding Madison Square Garden, so everything's back to normal around MSG ahead of game number 4. The NBA, in game 3, Victor Wembanyama at one point shoves Jalen Brunson to the floor. They investigated that because it wasn't a call to foul, but they investigated it to upgrade it to a flagrant foul, and they decided not to give Wembanyama a flagrant foul. So they reviewed it and went, no, we're not going to give him a flagrant for that. Here's why the Knicks wanted another flagrant, because that would have been his third in the playoffs, and a fourth is an automatic suspension. So
okay,
Wembanyama is still at 2 flagrants in these playoffs.
Jalen got pushed down at another point, too. Like,
and that was a flagrant foul
on
a different member of the San Antonio Spurs. Yeah. So. Anyway. Victor Wembanyama still on 2 flagrants going into tonight's game 4. Again, Knicks lead the series 2-1.
Baseball, welcome back, Dylan Cease. He pitched a gem on Tuesday night.
Strike 3 called to get Garcia for strikeout number 9. And another strikeout for Cease. That's 10. Runner goes. And a swing and a miss. He strikes out Marsh again, and an outstanding outing for Dylan Cease.
The Blue Jays 3, Phillies 2. If you missed the final score, Cease, an outstanding return to the Jays rotation. Cease pitching 6 innings, gave up 3 hits, 1 run, struck out 11, coming off a hamstring injury. Max Scherzer returns from an injury tonight, so he'll be on the mound after the team split their first 2 of 3 game sets. So they'll go for the win tonight with Mad Max.
And we are one day away from the beginning of the World Cup in Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
I've been calling this the People's Team. I'm changing it now to the Dream Team. We need you guys in the streets, in the stadiums, to show up, to wear red, to show Canadian pride, to support these players, to support the Dream Team.
That is the head coach, Jesse Marsh, at a rally as the tournament does begin tomorrow. Mexico opens the tournament against South Africa. Shakira, part of the entertainment tomorrow in Mexico. South Korea, also takes on Czechia tomorrow. And then Canada and the United States open their tournaments on Friday. Canada against Bosnia and Herzegovina. I believe Alanis Morissette is doing the national anthem.
Michael Bublé
is part of the entertainment ahead of that one.
And then, of course,
the United States against Paraguay on Friday. As for the injuries, Moyes Bombido, still no word yet if he will be scratched from the roster and replaced. Alphonso Davies and Ralph Prezzo are in return to play protocol, so they look like they'll be ready, though not for the first match on Friday. And a little bit of concern when Ismael Kone not practicing today. Apparently he's got a fever, so he was stayed away from the team. So just another wrinkle for Canada ahead of the World Cup. It begins tomorrow, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Saskatchewan time, as one of the world's biggest tournaments lands in North America. Coming up next here on the Green Zone, it is Confidence Index Day for you in Rider Nation.
That's right.
Where will the Riders' season end up in 2026 as they defend that 2025 championship? Will it be a repeat? Will they make the Final Four? Will they lose the Grey Cup? Will they miss the playoffs entirely? Let us know where you think the Riders are headed as a new season begins this Saturday. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKLM. Ian Locker with you here in the Green Zone. Coming up later this afternoon, 4:05, Craig Reynolds, the president and CEO of the Rough Riders. Do you have any opening season questions for the president and CEO of the Riders?
That's maybe a good idea. Yeah, fire us a text.
Maybe regarding tailgating or something else? When you should be at the stadium on Saturday for the championship celebration?
You know what I want to ask him? I want to ask him because I'm guessing, like, once the tailgaters got the heads up that they were one of the first 200 that we're going to get to do this coming Saturday, season ticket holders only at this point, but down the road, they're going to open that up. I bet you people started sending in, like, weird requests. Like, can I bring a cannon?
I don't think
from the 1800s.
I don't know if it went that way. How big of a barbecue can I bring?
How
much booze can I bring?
And deep fryers.
It's probably about,
like, you're going to get a lot of really weird questions. I'm wondering what the most bizarre request was. Yeah. Can I put in a pool?
I have a semi trailer. Will that fit? Pool.
Guys might want to bring a hot tub down or something, right?
I don't know if that's allowed. It would have to fit in their parking spot, I guess. Jamie Locker with you here in the Green Zone. But to get you set on the CFL season, each and every third of the season, we do the confidence index. We've been doing it for years. Last year, Rider Nation, you were pretty darn confident this team was going to the Grey Cup at this point. And you were right. They won the whole darn thing. So at Jamie Nye, the Green Zone's retweeted it as well. It's pinned to the top of my Twitter account. Where will the Riders' season end up as they defend their 2025 Grey Cup champion? Will they repeat? Will they make it to the Grey Cup game and lose? Will they make the Final Four? Or will they miss the playoffs or lose in a division semifinal? Those are your options. 1-877-332-8255. If the Riders stay healthy, they repeat, says Tony, and go up against BC in the West Final.
I'm but kind of surprised by your by the results on your poll right now, if I'm being honest.
It's split between repeat and Final Four.
Yeah.
It's like Britton and I are fighting. He says repeat. I say Final Four. Locker, what do you think?
I put repeat.
No concerns over 16 players from the Grey Cup team? Not eight starters?
I'll tell you why. They have built a culture. The consistency of what it is that that organization has been doing over the last 2 years is going to carry through. I think that group is really good at picking the type of players that they want that fit into what it is that they're trying to accomplish on and off the field. And I think that they're just getting better and better and better at that. And I think they are going to continue to hum and roll, not unlike a organization just east of us over the last 5-6 years.
The Florida Panthers?
Oh, east. You meant the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
East.
Well, Florida's east of us. East and very south.
I know you're talking about the Bombers. The flagship franchise in the Canadian Football League, according to Stu Johnston.
Run,
Jamie Locker with the Ear of the Green Zone on this Wednesday, the eve of the kickoff of the World Cup of Soccer, as Canada, they will take on Bosnia and Herzegovina on Friday. Tomorrow, Mexico opens the tournament against South Africa, as that will be the official opener of the World Cup. The United States and Canada both open their parties on Friday. Matthew Schenetti will be covering Canada's squad, and has been covering Canada's squad for years, but all the way through the World Cup. And we bring him on to tell you about this Canadian squad as they rally a country around the world's biggest sporting spectacle. And Matt, with your research and all the work you've done, can you believe it's here, that it's actually here? It's 2026, and you're about to cover Canada in their home World Cup.
I think what the most surreal thing is, Jamie, and always good to talk to you, my friend, is that I'm standing at Toronto FC's training ground, actually also looking at the Toronto Argos' old training ground here just north of the city at a patch of land called Downsview Park, and thinking how surreal it is that the World Cup is about to happen about 17 kilometers away from me at Toronto Stadium. This is what the World Cup is. It is the one event that's deeper than a feeling in so many ways. And I still don't really think, and I'm only speaking of Toronto, I haven't been to Vancouver yet. I leave on Saturday after Canada's first game. I don't know if this country knows what's about to happen yet. The World Cup is kind of a flood of emotions, just given how diverse, energized, completely joyful the entire celebration usually is, and focused on the world's game. But when it happens, everyone across the country is going to feel that exact kind of emotion, set of emotions, especially if Canada goes on a run in this tournament.
Matthew, I'm curious about that lack of understanding, because we've had multiple conversations here on the Green Zone in Saskatchewan about where Canada is at. And do you think it's as simple as a goal on the TV or a win or making it through the first round that's going to get Canada behind this team?
A wonderful question. I think what we have here in our country, with as many diverse stories as we do, and mine, you know, being a small infinitesimal part of it, my family coming over here from Italy in 1951, the pride that, you know, I had as a child watching the Italian national team, because it was, especially through World Cups, when you think about Paolo Rossi in 1982, certainly the World Cup victory in 2006, and Fabio Grosso's moment, those are ingrained in me because of what they meant to my cultural background. And there's always been this separation, not, you know, intentionally in some ways, but just a fact of life, given the fact that Canada, the men's team in particular, has not been consistently competitive, except for over the last 4, 5, 6 years, you know, starting really with John Herdman coming on to the team and now it evolving under Jesse Marsh. Because we have never had that touchstone, it's hard for people to understand. You know, not only myself as an Italian Canadian, but if you think about German Canadians, you think about Spanish Canadians, you think about even South Korean Canadians who watched that incredible run in 02, they have memories and moments that conjure sensations in them. We don't have that yet on a stage like this, at least not the men. Obviously, when you think about the 2015 Women's World Cup and Christine Sinclair hitting that penalty against China, yeah, late on in the game, and Commonwealth Stadium erupting in joy. Like, that's a touchstone moment that when Canadians think about World Cup soccer and Canada representing our nation at a World Cup stage, that's what you think about. The men have this incredible, unique opportunity to do something that in the modern game you don't see very often. Like, there isn't a new moment, a fresh moment, that any other established nation is going to have. What we're standing on is the edge of possibility. And I think that's the wonderful thing about this tournament, that you really have no idea until it actually happens.
Matthew Schenetti, TSN World Cup reporter, will have Canada's team covered throughout the tournament. As we look at this team specifically, how much will these injuries actually impact their ability to maybe get past the group stage and win a knockout game or two?
This is still the deepest team a Canadian men's program has ever fielded at an international tournament. But this is not their full-strength team. Alfonso Davies is not fully fit. Moise Bambito was not fully fit. And we're watching, especially Bambito, very, very keenly over the next 48 hours. And Jesse Marsh's decision, because ultimately, myself and others have confirmed reports that Moise Bambito was not ready to play for this World Cup, and this had to come off the roster. At the end of the day, Canada needs its best lineup or Canada has to have its most talented lineup to get on, to go on this incredible journey. But if they lose to Bosnia on Friday, it's a massive disappointment, full stop. Not because Bosnia should be dismissed, not at all. They beat the four-time World Cup champions, Italy, who've been desperate to get back to a World Cup. They haven't been to three straight World Cups, and Bosnia wanted it more. If you want to know what this Bosnian team is about, they want it more. They excel on crosses. They excel on set pieces. They excel at fighting the other team physically, fighting them for every ball. Canada has to match that. That's why you see so much of Jesse Marsh investing in the emotions and the focus of his team. Not because he thinks he can't do it. They actually can beat Boston. They can beat Qatar. They can absolutely set themselves up to potentially go into that final group game on June 24th against Switzerland with the ability to stay in Vancouver on the line. But this team has to overcome the injuries it has. This team has to be as focused and locked in as it ever has been.
Matthew, as a fan of sports that doesn't follow soccer much, I have a good idea of what the impact of a coach can have on any organization, regardless of the sport. And the interesting thing about Jesse Marsh is he's on a lot of people's radar that might not even follow soccer, just based on the press that he has gotten in the last couple of years. I'm interested on your take on Jesse Marsh's impact on this program and the his ability to get this team to a point where everybody in the country is talking about them.
Jesse Marsh has an incredible coaching pedigree, having been around Bob Bradley, having been around Bruce Arena, having been around some of the best coaches in the history of U.S. soccer. And let's not get it confused. Jesse Marsh, at one time, really wanted to be the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. But he has absolutely fallen in love with being the head coach of the Canadian men's national team. And what I find incredible about what he is doing is he has gotten this entire team to believe. John Herdman did the same thing. But John Herdman, at some point in his own development as a coach, I'm going to say reached the ceiling, but there always comes a point with every team that the messaging can be exhausting. And the kind of messaging that John Herdman had, which is a sense of self-purpose, a sense of strength in community, a sense of brotherhood. Well, that ran its course in Qatar, got the team, it powered the team to the top of CONCACAF all the way to that tournament in Qatar. But then we saw key moments in the tournament before halftime against Belgium, in the 25th minute against Croatia, and in those first 22 minutes against Morocco, where Canada fell apart and lost all three of those games. Jesse Marsh has come in to keep this team mentally and emotionally focused. Everything he has done has been intentional. He has challenged these players. I was there at the very beginning in Rotterdam at halftime when they actually got smacked around by the Netherlands and lost 4-0. Then I saw them come back in Bordeaux against France and play one of the most impressive games I've ever seen a Canadian men's team play. Then I was there with them on the journey all the way to the semifinals of Copa America. I watched Jesse Marsh's messaging evolve, his demands evolve, and I watched the players embrace every aspect of his plan. And Jesse Marsh, intentionally now, the messaging has shifted. He's now giving them, and he has said this before, I am unimportant. It's all about them. It's all about the players. And certainly that has a dual effect. Not only can we see the kind of impact Marsh has had on his players, but the impact he's had across the country. You see him now in ads across the country for GE appliances and having that presence that he has, not only with the players, but now with the public, and trying to encourage the public to get behind this team, willing them, demanding them, wanting Canada to embrace this moment. This team has to win. Jesse Marsh can have all the good vibes. He can have all of the planning and the purpose. But much like John Herdman, he has to win. It's not that it's some catastrophic thing if Canada doesn't advance. Canada is still learning itself on the stage. But Jesse Marsh has set everything up for this team to win.
Canada's odds of getting through the group stage, getting a point, winning a game, drawing a game in the World Cup, as it's not not about just scoring a goal anymore. It's about getting some W's.
Yeah, Bosnia-Herzegovina is going to challenge them a lot of the way because they're going to be very physical with them. Those first 10, 15 minutes, Alistair Johnson said it yesterday, we're going to have to be mentally focused. As I mentioned off the top in that last question, what happened against Belgium when Mitzi Batshuayi scored that goal right before halftime and Alphonso Davies stepped up and took the penalty and missed? Well, that was those were two defining moments of a game in which Canada held strong against Belgium. Now the odds of them going into that game against Bosnia and Herzegovina, they're at home. They're in Toronto, though. They will have, certainly we can debate the tickets and the crowd and all that, but they should have the crowd and the country behind them and energized for this moment. Certainly you can call that pressure. You can call that expectation. I call it the perfect stage for this team to really embrace history, because a win by this men's team, I can guarantee you, if they were to come out of that game with a win, this country will take notice. And then they go into a game against Qatar in which they should win. Qatar is not the same level as Canada is. However, this team also has to fight its own demons, because it oftentimes plays down to opponents. We saw it last year in the quarterfinals of Copa America, where they lost to a team perhaps comparable to Qatar in Guatemala. There are challenges here. There are demons that this, I won't call them demons, but certain characteristics this team has that it's going to have to overcome. That's why Jesse Marsh has made them very purposeful in keeping to themselves and keeping a high confidence. The World Cup is a level, I mean, I've been very lucky to watch it right in front of my face. These are Olympic-level athletes running and thinking and executing at the highest level. That's what the World Cup is. The chances of Canada getting out of the group, I don't bet. I'm not on poly market, so I'm not going to get, I don't know the numbers, but I will say this. if they don't do it, if they don't go into that game against Switzerland with at least 3 points, with the opportunity to advance out of the group, we will be talking about a very, very, very disappointing tournament.
That is Matthew Schinetti of TSN. He's got Team Canada covered for the World Cup. You'll hear more from Matthew tomorrow on his overall predictions for who's going to reign supreme over the next 40 days until the World Cup final at East Rutherford, New Jersey, MetLife Stadium. And when the trophy gets handed over to a country who will party like they've never partied before, will it be England?
Spain.
Spain's probably
back to back.
Probably going to win. Not back to back.
Argentina won last time. Yes.
Last time out. Yeah. But they won. Spain won Euros 2 years ago. Yeah. That's why they're the favorite. They haven't lost in like almost 30 international matches. It's crazy. But tomorrow in Mexico City, it is the opener of the World Cup when Mexico takes on South Africa. And then Friday, Canada will begin their journey against Bosnia and Herzegovina from Toronto Stadium in Toronto. Coming up next here on The Green Zone, it's This Day in Sports on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Bridge Farm remembers.
On this day in sports history, it was actually 10 years ago today, June the 10th, when we found out of the death of a Saskatchewan sporting icon.
Gordie Howe slipped away, goes right after. Lays it back to Roberts. Gordie Roberts, another shot. Now Sean steers that away. Allison goes in after it. Back of the net. Howe, he scores! Gordie Howe bringing it right around the goal and sliding it in to make it 3-2 Hartford.
Yes, Gordie Howe, on this day, died at the age of 88. I remember this day vividly, and many others like me were probably going to the same concert I was going to, because Garth Brooks was in Saskatoon at SaskTel Center, and that was the concert I went to. That was the June 10th concert, and Garth came out in a Gordie Howe jersey and talked about Gordie being a hockey icon. But what was cooler was outside SaskTel Center, there's the Gordie Howe statue, and it was adorned with flowers. And it was actually Garth Brooks and got his people to go to a flower shop in Saskatoon and go, all the flowers you can get.
Huh.
And put it around Gordie's statue that day.
Oh, that's a really cool gesture.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago today.
I think Garth is a bit of a hockey fan.
He's Nashville Predators. But
he's friends with, like, Chaser and, like, a bunch of guys in the NHL world.
Absolutely he is. So It was a sad day to find out the death of the greatest hockey player this province has ever born was Gordie Howe. Died 10 years ago today.
One of the greatest Canadian hockey players of all time.
Yes, and one of the greatest players of all time, who the Sporting News just opted not to put on their all-time player
list. Who's going to keep everybody in check, Sporting News? Right?
Gordie's elbow was famous for a reason. He didn't hand out many, but when he had to, he did. That was 10 years ago today.